Create. It's so easy to tear things down. Create. The reason I say this, it's I think it's the antidote, or at least the treatment for this languishing that we have, that I've seen now all around me, people that are not really depressed, but they're not really great. They're just passive viewers of their lives instead of participating. And I think that if you stop judging what you do.
Hey, I'm Lara, an artist, educator, and entrepreneur who's danced through life in Australia, London, and California. Now I'm an Aussie in Atlanta, Georgia, USA. Juggling roles as an artist, ex-dancer, current actor, author, professional educator, and qualified life coach, I'm also a wife and mother of two. Join me on this podcast crafted for creative souls at every level, entrepreneurs, artists, dreamers, and hope-filled humans alike. I'm here to guide you towards a life of love, purpose, adventure, and boundless creativity. As a healthy, wealthy, and wise creative soul, I invite you to hit subscribe for weekly inspiration. Anticipate solo episodes, exclusive interviews with creative luminaries, and insightful discussions with my hottie hubby, Andrew, a specialist performance physical therapist, as we delve into the dynamics of relationships and more. Dive into a 360-degree view of making a creative life you'll love. Welcome to the Healthy, Wealthy, Wise Artist Podcast, your go-to destination for enriching conversations with artists and creatives and entrepreneurs and dreamers of big things who are shaping our world with their unique perspectives and talents. And I'm thrilled to be your host, and I have a captivating episode lined up for you today. Did you know? I hope so. That artists can be bridges. They can connect emotions and the heart and mind. They can shape culture and so much more. So I decided to talk to Orenzo Del Castillo, award-winning poet focused on bridging the gap between people, building connections and empathy through creation, art, integrity and love. It's no small calling. Renzo, a poet and author whose debut poetry collection Still has been making waves for its poignant exploration of the immigrant experience. Now, this is something a lot of us brush over, but even though I'm from Western culture, I live in America and I am an immigrant. And even though my story is different to many others who have suffered much more than me, I do empathize with this kind of story. And Renzo is a storyteller, and his journey from Lima, Peru to Miami as a political refugee has deeply influenced his work, offering readers a window into the complexities of displacement, resilience, and human connection, and how we can use artistry to bridge those gaps. I hope that you're thinking about this stuff because it is legacy. It's something that you can leave in this world when you go and pass on to the next, something a lot of us don't think about. In this episode, it's about the power of art to transcend borders and speak universal truths. Renzo's lens is amazing, and we're going to dive into the immigrant experience he went through in America, unpacking the layers of identity, belonging, cultural fitting in, assimilation. We're going to explore how travel serves as a catalyst for empathy, allowing you to see things differently, affecting your creativity, allowing us to walk in the shoes of others and embrace the richness of diversity. Artists do so often need to put themselves into the shoes of others. And beyond the pages of poetry, Renzo is a beacon of community building, fostering connections with other artists in Miami and beyond. We're going to uncover ways in which your artistic expression can serve as a conduit for forging meaningful relationships and igniting change in our world. So whether you're an artist, a dreamer, or simply someone curious about the world around you and what you can do to offer your creativity into it, join us. Talk to Renzo with me. We will weave together his stories of resilience and connection and the power of creativity. And you don't want to miss this. He is an incredible human. Welcome, Renzo. It's great to connect with you. Can you tell me about your journey from Lima, Peru to Miami and how that experience has affected and influenced your creativity and your poetry?
Of course. Well, first of all, thank you, Lara. No problem. Thank you for sharing your platform with me. It's great to have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
I was born in Lima, Peru, and we came over because my mom was the secretary to the Minister of Health, and my dad was a major in the Army. And during the 80s, I'm 40, so this was around 88, 89, I think, there was a very active terrorist organization called Shining Path in Peru. Mm. And they were at a union negotiation with Dr. Lozano, the Minister of Health, and they brought weapons to that negotiation. So my mom preyed on their misogynism and said, "Hey, you guys want coffee?" They're like, "Yeah, nobody leaves a room, but you go get coffee." So she came back with the police.
Good woman.
And, well, that marked her for death. So one of our nannies ended up being a terrorist. One of the nurses when my mom gave birth to my sister. So this was before. My sister's 87, so this was probably like around 86. We left on 89. One of the nurses was a terrorist, and there was a third. There was a third incident. So my mom said, "Forget this," and we came to Miami, Florida, in the United States. My godfather, her big brother, was already here, and he sponsored my student visa. So that's how we ended up here. Mm. And the way that that affected me, the creativity was. Well, there were moments that marked me, right? So I remember being maybe 6, 7, 8 years old and my parents saying, "Hey, go ahead and eat dinner. We already ate," knowing that that wasn't true, but not really understanding why. Mm. So when I was growing up, if you asked little Renzo what he wanted to be, it was, "I want to have money," because money meant you ate, money meant your lights didn't get turned off. And that motivated me for a great deal. But, you know, I wasn't able to travel much. But what my parents did give me so much was a love for learning and reading and books. And that introduced me to many of the poets that I admired very early on. Neruda, Bukowski, Szymborska, you know, Wilde, etc. So that's how that influenced that.
That makes a lot of sense. And now your poetry, and probably always, it delves into themes of resilience and overcoming adversity. Can you describe how creativity and expression have helped you navigate difficult times in your life? Has it been an outlet for you?
Yeah, I actually recently started writing again. I had stopped. I went to school for aerospace engineering and switched.
That's wild. Yeah.
And switched to poetry.
That's really wild.
An incredibly popular decision with my parents.
I'm sure.
But I'm 40, right? So this happened after September 11th. And for grad school, I got into a program in Cambridge. But I had a student visa coming in. I had political asylum, not my citizenship, not my residency yet. And my, if for those of you who were around that time in the United States, it was a very heightened situation. So it was up to the discretion of the immigration officials at the gate at the time, if they would let you back in.
Yeah.
And I knew about two people that got deported. They weren't terrorists. Mm-hmm. So my parents talked to me and they said, "Hey, how about you finish here?" And I didn't argue. I got it, but I was heartbroken. Mm. So I stopped writing and went full corporate for a long time.
Yeah.
Then my dad in 2021 passed away from pancreatic cancer. So after that, I started writing again. And the book is called Still for about two reasons. The first, there was like a 7-year period in my life where I thought life had stopped giving me things and it started to take them away, which is not logical, right? Like maybe you and I strike up a friendship from here and that's a gift that the universe gave us today,
yeah.
Right? Like
yeah.
Life, as long as you're alive, life could continue giving you things.
Yeah.
But my dad passed away, my grandmother, my cousin who was my age, my little cousin, my best friend's mom, some uncles and aunts, some friends, my dog.
Oh my gosh.
The relationship I thought was going to be marriage ended around that time. So I was not in a good place until I realized that, okay, the first time you tried sushi, did you try it because you're like, "This looks delicious"? Or did you try it because somebody you cared about, loved, admired, said, "Hey, this is cool"? Mm-hmm. Or your favorite movie growing up? Do you have any memories associated with the people that you watched it with? Mm. So I realized that those who I thought were gone were still with me. Mm. As long as I'm around, we are made up of the little pieces of everybody we've ever loved, everybody Beautiful. Who's ever loved us, and everything that we do, the way I comb my hair, the way my half smile, you know, like my smirk or anything like that. That's
pretty
that's,
cool, by the way, just for the listeners.
Poppy Harrison Ford. No, like it's my dad,
you got the movie right? smirk, yeah.
yeah, or my grandmother or, you know, my cousin, my dog. like, yeah. Like sometimes when it's there's lightning, I still expect her to try to climb up on my hand the way she used to. So that's one of the reasons it was called Still. The other reason it was called Still, it's called Still. It's that I needed to stop and process it. And I wasn't. I was just thinking about the next thing, going forward, putting it off. And that is going to come out as acne or as shortness of breath or as anxiety, or it's going to come out when you start repressing that. So in order to go through that, writing the book was almost a form of therapy.
Yeah.
And that's how it affected me in that way.
That's so beautiful. And I can hear that, you know, and from what you've studied and what I'm seeing so far, that you're quite a deep thinker. Am I right in saying that?
maybe too much.
Right? maybe too much.
Maybe but too much. Yes.
But that ability to reflect and to think deeply can really affect poetry, can't it, in a beautiful way. And I know that from what I've scene of Still, your poetry, you're exploring the themes of immigration and connection and community. And how do you think art and poetry actually helps bridge divides? And, you know, not just divides in culture, but like the heart, the head-heart connection. What's your experience and thoughts around the bridge that poetry and creativity can be?
Oh, I think it's incredibly important because... Let me put it this way. Art develops an analytical relationship between yourself and an object, right? Mm. Like the second you see a painting that moves you, the second you hear a work that moves you, a song that moves you, you start analyzing it. You start breaking it down just by the nature of the relationship.
Yeah.
And that leads to empathy because you're seeing it from a different perspective, right? And I think art is so important in building connections and making you think a little deeper.
Yeah.
And I believe that right now as a world, I won't say culture, I won't say generation, but all of us right now are so divided in terms of how we think. Like if I have a differing idea than you, it is cause most likely for you're attacking my idea. It's us versus them. It's gladiatorial combat, entertainment, instead of seeing it from a different perspective or experiencing it from a different perspective, which, you know, immigration is the ultimate form of travel.
Yeah.
Right. And I came here and I came here very young. So when I went back to Peru finally, after about 25 years, I was too American for the Peruvians. I've always been too Peruvian for the Americans. I think I benefit from my generation is kind of like a capitalist generation. We have like a buffet of, I want to take this aspect of Christmas and celebrate it, and that other aspect of Christmas and celebrate it.
Yeah.
And then that's how I will celebrate Christmas, right? It's not necessarily the way it was traditionally done. I grew up Catholic, or the way it was done in the Catholic Church,
yeah,
or the way that it's done in the US. Like my Christmas is a melting pot of different things that I've collected along the way. And I started traveling later in life, like around when I was 33, when I was able to afford it. And since then, learning different languages, going to different places, I think has given me a perspective in terms of problem solving, because I can see it from different ways. So I'm an executive in the healthcare industry. I get to solve complex issues every day. And I think that, and I apply principles that I've learned from art to my department with my resources during team building and addressing issues and problems, because I think art helps you bridge that gap. It allows you to connect on the things that you appreciate, but also delve deeper than the superficial. And instead of focusing on the problem, getting that collective input to solve it together, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, You know, whether you believe climate change is real or not, last summer was the hottest summer on record in the world. That's fact. That's not really in dispute. As we're solving these different issues, we're not going to solve them apart. We're going to solve them together. And I think art plays an integral part in that.
It really does, because I've seen governments fund musical productions to change a political environment so that people think differently in Australia. And I do know that the way that art gets people's heart really does affect the way we think, and it can change culture. So I think it's very, very powerful. And you mentioned travel and that you believe travel influenced your life perspective and it's informed your poetry. And I love that you said that, because I haven't come from a country of suffering, but I'm an immigrant in America and I'm new here. This isn't my own land. And I do think travel is very special, particularly when it relates to artistry and seeing the world differently. So tell me more about your perspective and how it's informed your creative expression, your poetry.
Sure. So I'll take you back a little bit. So I was always fascinated with France, been a Francophile for a long time. I think it was like reading The Three Musketeers when I was very young, and then it was The Count of Monte Cristo, which is one of my favorite books though. Mm-hmm. And then I got into The Three Musketeers, like Dumas and then Kant and all these other writers. And I had gone to Paris for my 33rd birthday, and I met a girl and I fell in love.
Oh, of course you did.
Which, of course. And it was exactly like all the books, all the songs, how it tells you it's going to be. And we started about two and a half year relationship, really. And this is the relationship that didn't work out around the time my dad was sick. But before that, she spoke English and French. I spoke English and Spanish, a little bit of Portuguese, a little bit of Italian. And I've always wanted to learn French, because I also didn't want to be the dumb boyfriend who was just like,
I'm just nodding politely. Yeah, I get that.
Je ne parle pas. You know, like, I didn't getting it all wrong. And eventually, after spending some time there, it started in informing my perspective. And eventually, after some time, after that relationship was over, I had always wanted to learn French so that, for a variety of different reasons, but what motivated me to actually take classes in the Alliance Française and doing all of that stuff was I wanted to understand her without translation, without filter. If you speak multiple languages, you'll understand that there's something to seeing something, and it's like, I wish I read Polish so I could see like Wisława Szymborska's vocabulary poem in the way that it was originally intended instead of in a translation. So much can be lost. Yeah. And it was important. So when I was doing the book and I was, you know, the relationship was over, I wasn't necessarily fixated on it, but I had this, like, I always wanted to be able to express myself to her in her language. I wrote a poem in French. Fifth grade reading level, right? Not sophisticated at all.
Yeah.
But I wrote it in French first, and then I did it in English, because it was important to me that it's not like I'm not in contact with her. There's no reason to, but it was important to me at least to put out there a poem that told her that the moments that we had together, I cherish, that I hold no ill will, and that the relationship I had with her made me the person I am today, which I hope is a better partner for those who came after and who I'll eventually end up with. So it was, I think when you are emotionally invested in something and travel, informing your perspective, seeing it from a different culture, it fosters that creativity. I would have never have done that or attempted to write poems in French or other languages if it wasn't for things of that nature.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I totally agree with you, because I think that the perspectives I bring through my creativity now and my artistry definitely influenced by having a deeper cultural understanding and seeing, I mean, that's what we do. We tell stories and we put ourselves in other people's shoes, and empathy is a big part of it. So I think it's a really precious thing to be able to. It is, I know, for many people, a privilege to travel. So I appreciate you saying that when you could afford it, when you were in your 30s, that's when you started. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. It's, I don't want to take it for granted that I'm very lucky in the sense that I've achieved a bit of financial security, but before that I couldn't. But even if you can't, you could always take a road trip a couple of miles and go to a different city and check something out. It's so important to just see something that's outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah, that's really true. And as an immigrant, which is probably a funny word because you've lived in Miami for a really long time now, what challenges have you faced, if any, since that time? And I'm sure there's been all kinds of things in the United States. And how has poetry helped you to navigate that, you know, those challenges in an immigrant life? And is that quite a strong theme for you in what you write?
Yeah, I'm very lucky that I grew up in Miami, so I didn't really feel that otherness because Miami is a bit of a melting pot.
It's it
a
is, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Latin American and Caribbean migrations, people all over the world come to enjoy Miami, right?
Yeah.
But when I started going to uni, to college, and I started traveling as a consultant, I started going places where I was in a coffee shop and somebody yelled, "Go back to where you came from."
Are you kidding me? Wow.
No, it's more common. And I know Miami's south, but the south. And I remember my immediate response was, you know, where the penthouse of somewhere you can never afford. And it was just this anger that came out because I didn't know that other people, I wasn't used to it. And I had enough of a self-esteem to be like, how dare you, right? Like indignation. Yeah. Yeah. But that was not the way to do it. Because what I learned because of art, because of other things, is empathy, right? Like, why are they coming to me this way? Why? What about me, you know, threatened? Like, because I'm like, I'm in a suit. I'm, you know, like why? And then if I wasn't in a suit, so what? If I wasn't presenting as a capable professional, so what, right? Like, why do we need to treat each other this way? What came to them? Part of the issue, I could have grown up hating the Shining Path, right? They tried to kill my family. They came to me. But if you go back far enough in history, like in the 70s, there was an agrarian reform in Peru. As a South American country, we have, I think, my opinion, I think we have pretty weak civil societies because of colonialism lasting as long as it did. And then we had like far right governments and far left governments and far right governments and far left governments. And at that time in the 70s, late 70s, there was a far left government and they did an agrarian reform where they took the industries from the owners and gave it to the workers, the people, but they never trained the workers on how to run the industries and they paid the owners in the new currency that didn't have value.
Yeah.
A couple of years later, El Nino hit and destroyed the fishing industry. And then you have this situation where there's rampant poverty, even worse outside of cities like Lima, the capital. And if you have, you know, if you're somebody who has four kids and somebody comes with a gun and tells you, hey, those people have five TVs and you have your four children are starving, what are you going to do? So I don't condone it, but I understand it and I have empathy towards it, right? So I think empathy is the way that I dealt with it because outside, I was very sheltered. I realize that now growing up in a place diverse as Miami. But when you go to other areas in the world, not just in the United States, there is an otherness that comes from being an immigrant.
Yeah. I feel it every day when I talk in the South. It's like I stand out. I'm different. But also I'm, you know, in no way, shape, or form want to compare to underprivileged immigrants that have come here to survive, where for me it was choice and it was privilege and a job offer and, you know, completely different situation. But I do empathize, as we've been talking about, with feeling different and being different.
And if I may, not to cut you off, but your feelings of leaving home, the world that you knew, your family, your support system, those are all valid. You don't have to have some sort of tragedy befalling you to feel and validate the experience of being human,
I
right?
So that.
I just want to let you know, hey,
That's cool. Nice. I like that you say that because I'm talking to someone whose story, you know, it might have been a long time ago, but it's still part of your story is there's, you know, having to leave is not a nice thing. Tell me too, how do you balance vulnerability? Because obviously a lot of poetry that you write is vulnerable, and how do you balance that and your own privacy in your writing? Do you care at all? Do you feel like you've pulled your soul and people don't always read it the right way? Like, how's that journey?
Well, I came to terms long ago that once I write something, it's not mine anymore.
Okay.
And a lot of what I write is based on my experiences, because I think we can only imagine what we've experienced. We don't have a reference point. It's hard to really open your mind that way. So let me put it this way. I wrote this poem and I performed it in an open mic, and a number of people came up after me, but two stood out. And one said, "What a lovely poem about heartbreak and love lost and anger." And then the other person said, "Oh, what an awesome poem about, like, you know, fighting the system and the tax code and all this stuff." And I'm like, yes and yes. What I brought to that poem, I already brought to it. Everything becomes ekphrastic. For ekphrastic poetry or ekphrastic works are just works of art based on other works of art or inspired by other works of art. Mm-hmm. So I think that if you read a poem from my book, or if you read my book, you don't know what I brought to it. You're bringing your own experiences.
That's good.
And creating new meaning. It's like dialectical realism, theory of montage, right? Like, there's a thesis, an antithesis, and a new synthesis, right? The way that it worked in editing was an image of a baby sleeping, an image of a dog barking, an image of a baby crying. Your mind, even though you didn't see them together, is going to say the sleeping baby was scared by the barking dog and woke up, right?
Yeah,
so
that's
creating
great.
New meaning every time you're reading a poem. So you're going to get things from your experience that come up for you that I may never have intended. But because we share this common language of humanity and experience, there you go. So together we've just created something new.
I love that. That's such a beautiful way to describe it as well. And is there a favorite specific poem in your collection that really reflects, we'd say, really is your life in a nutshell? And you don't have to share it with us, but even a little tiny bit of it, I would love to hear.
I'm happy to.
Great.
I mean, I could... We mentioned, well, I can read you in English. My pronunciation takes me some time in French. The French poem we discussed, if that's
something. Yeah, that would be beautiful. That would, yeah.
It's called To-Do List, Liste Faire, 78. And just a little inside baseball for you. It's a to-do list because it made it really easy to write in French. It's just fragments of sentences, so it's sometimes cheating a little bit, but.
Yeah.
Make love in French and sing in Spanish. Eat tortilla de papa in Buenos Aires. Run 5 blocks to your car to beat the rain. Temper your temper with a smile. Rest my head on your lap while you read on the futon. Count our macros while drinking white wine. Stay at that treehouse Airbnb you keep bringing up. Kiss all of your tattoos, starting at the wrist. Go geocaching to get lost. Build a fort out of pillows and your mother's duvet. Drink Negronis by the Mediterranean. Breathe in your laughter. Take blurry selfies while you make that face. Survive dinner with your aunt. Wrap Christmas gifts with parcel paper and red yarn. Argue less to listen more. Have a picnic by Lake Zurich. Compare stories from our childhoods. Ride bikes along the Loire and visit castles. Trace constellations using the freckles on your skin. Dash through Madrilenean crosswalks. Lay on the beach wearing matching sunglasses. Choose our daughter's names. Play my guitar while you play with my hair. Travel back in time to that afternoon at Montmartre. Pick up the laundry. Visit my tailor and choose the right tweed swatch. Listen to Nina Simone vinyls. Watch before sunset on your laptop before it breaks down. Pick up a carton of almond milk. Stop blaming you for our problems. Wake up late and stay in bed anyway. Plant a garden of lavender and grapes. Live 1,000 lifetimes. Find you in each one. forgive myself.
That's so, so beautiful. And I love, I mean, your knowledge of poetry is profound, because to me, I'm like, I just know how to rhyme the second and fourth lines, you know, like that's kind of the extent of my personal poetry. So like hearing that's like, wow, that's so beautiful. It's very visceral. You know, you can just really be there in all of those moments, and your voice is amazing. Do you do performance poetry as well?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. I actually hired somebody to do the audiobook, and they told me, we'll take less money. You should do the audiobook.
You should do
I've never done that, something like that.
I did it.
It's on Audible. It's available. I did the audiobook, and I do there's a great, great poetry community in Miami. So I'll just a little segue. I was just in Dublin a couple of months ago.
Nice.
And Dublin is a wonderful city, the city of, you know, Samuel Beckett, Seamus Heaney, W.B. Yeats, Oscar Wilde, great literary city. And Miami's considered to be young and superficial, but again, a center for a lot of migrations all around the world. Mm. A lot of people pass through Miami. All of the big political items of our time are happening here. Women's reproductive rights, healthcare fraud, immigration reform, climate change. Why are our voices not valid?
Yeah.
And it's important for me, with some other good friends of mine now, to create space for Miami poetry community to come up and speak of these things. Poets used to be the ambassadors, the delegates of countries, not as much anymore, but it happened because they were able to bridge gaps back to what we were talking about.
Nice. I love that so much. That is true. And I think that, you know, Renaissance is coming back to that power of bridging gaps, isn't it, really? And it's a beautiful ability to bring change. And you were talking about the community of artists that you're sewing into in Miami now. And have you found that artistry has been a good way to cultivate community around you?
Yeah.
What does that look like for you?
1,000%. So this might sound familiar to some of your listeners, but I grew up in Miami, so I spent my entire life trying to escape it. I've wanted to live abroad for a long time. And after my father passed, I bought property here. And when I made the decision that this was going to be my home for the foreseeable future, I started living in it instead of trying to avoid it. And that's when I realized there was so much more substance than I ever gave it credit for, right? So I think part of my that drive that I have to have Miami be recognized is it's a clap back to myself, right?
Yeah.
Like for dismissing it. And here there's communities like the Miami Poetry Club that holds an open mic at Books and Books, is one of the biggest independent bookstores in Miami. It has a number of locations. The Coral Gables location hosts an open mic night every third Monday of the month, Palms and Poetry, which is, God, I think there's like 80 people.
Sounds lovely.
That go, and different people every time.
Yeah.
Along with the regulars, there's Ink and Flow Poets is another organization that I'm involved with that they go around and do it. I've been hosting a lot of events for book releases for local poets. So it's really been just like a space of inclusion and acceptance, to the point that when I released my book last year, I had 12 poets come and they all did readings from, I didn't need to read anything. I read at the end because they were like, you better read from your book.
Yeah.
It was such a gift because it was all of these poets. I had 12, I asked, and 12 made it, which in Miami is pretty rare.
Yeah.
Right? You always have somebody that can't make it. They all made it.
Wow.
And they performed pieces from my book, and their performances were different than anything I had ever done or imagined. And it's one of my favorite moments in my life, like memories that I have in my life, just to remember how they performed it and how it touched them and which ones they chose, especially since I know them as people. I'm like, oh, of course you choose that one.
That's so cool. It's kind of what you were saying before. It's like our circumstances and how we can draw different things out. Well, one more question before I get you to tell people where they can find you and your work online. But what advice do you have for aspiring writers, poets, artists who are navigating maybe similar experiences and seeking to use their art to connect with others?
Create. It's so easy to tear things down. Create. The reason I say this, I think it's the antidote, or at least the treatment for this languishing that we have, that I've seen now all around me, people that are not really depressed, but they're not really great. They're just passive viewers of their lives instead of participating. And I think that if you stop judging what you do, I was just in a conversation with someone yesterday that said, I want to write, but I always throw it away. I'm like, why are you judging it? Just get it out there. Or like, oh, your stuff is good. I studied poetry. I'm familiar with it. You know, like if you study it, you will get to that point. And I'm not saying I'm better than anyone else, right? That's so subjective. I just have a technical foundation for it. Poetry is not meant to intimidate. It's supposed to be inclusive. Art is supposed to be inclusive. So the advice is live your life, travel, have the experiences that you need to create and go create.
Mm. That's beautiful. So, so beautiful. So where can people read more of your poems, find your books, find your work, connect with you, if that's what you like?
Sure. So Still is available on Amazon. We became an Amazon bestseller in a number of categories last month, which is really cool.
It's not easy to do. Well done.
Not for poetry, for sure. but it was such a treat. And it's available in hardcover. Paperbacks released on April 16th. I don't know when this comes out, but on April 16th, the Audible is available, the audiobook, as well as the Kindle. You can get it at Barnes & Noble in the U.S., Amazon internationally, in Books & Books in Miami, if you're local, places like Dalazine, other local bookstores. You can follow me at LRENZ, E-L-R-E-N-Z on Instagram, RenzoDelCastillo.com is the website, which is about to get a facelift very, very soon. I'm on LinkedIn under my name, so that you can see that I actually am an executive in healthcare. And the reason I mention that is so many people think like, oh, you're this, you can't be that. No, you can be in the corporate world and be an artist. You can, don't put any limits on yourself.
That's right? Good.
So you can find me at all those places.
That's so good. And thank you so much for this beautiful conversation. I have adored everything you've said. And my favorite place to read poems is definitely on the beach in Australia. Do you have a favorite place?
Oh, man. Anywhere I can. But I would next, when I go to Australia, I have friends there. I am definitely going to read a poem at the beach and remember you.
Thank you. And watch the sun rise or set, depending on what side you're on and what time you want to get up or go to bed. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Phew, today's masterclass is done. I love reaching back and saying, I've done this, and helping you learn the easy way. If you want more, head to larabiancapilcher.com for show notes, links, freebies, my blog, coaching and courses, and you can also head to my socials, Lara Bianca Pilcher on Instagram and Facebook. I'm also on Twitter and Pinterest. Thanks again for listening. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That would mean the world to me. And of course, keep on living the healthy, wealthy, wise artist living towards your dream life. Bye, friends. P.S. Shout out to my hottie hubby, Andrew Pilcher, who does all the editing on this podcast.